The hardest lesson of all is for us to use our intuition and access the wisdom from these group sessions that have been implanted in our subconscious in the afterlife. As we go through each lifetime, we are far more likely to react to our challenging surroundings and situations without thinking, let alone using our intuition or meditating. So we have to keep returning to Earth to learn how to listen to our inner wisdom, and react to many different situations in the interests of everyone's highest benefit in our life. Part 3. New Directions. 26. Soul Growth. We all have hardships that we have to face in each lifetime, no matter who we are or how advanced is our soul. In fact, old souls are often those burdened the most with many lifetimes of karma to work through. We are unlikely to advance if we breeze through life without a worry or a care. Knowing that the next life was going to be very arduous, Kalinga's spirit could have refused if she chose. Not everything is set in stone. In most cases, the elders do give us choices before we accept a life contract. Some spirits do not want to reincarnate under any circumstances, particularly after a difficult life, and may be allowed to stay for long periods in the afterlife. Other reluctant spirits are shown compelling reasons why the life being proposed will benefit their development and are encouraged to accept. If the Council of Elders offers someone a life in which the soul can have growth experiences, subtle pressure and karma can come into play, and in the end there may be no choice but to accept. Spirits are given every help in pre-life a preparation with their soul groups, so that they can reincarnate and potentially have those experiences in a positive way. The long-term goal is for each soul to complete a full range of experiences, after which there will eventually be no need to go back to Earth. However, this does not necessarily mean that once the earthly life cycle has ended, we can automatically just settle into an easy life in the spirit world forever. Some souls do reach the point at which they are advanced enough to become teachers and guides, while others are encouraged to explore other worlds for their development. Earth is one of the lower-based planets in our universe, with a very dense energy level. The vibrations are low and very thick, but the learning potential is intense. Life on other inhabited worlds is beyond my subconscious knowledge, as I have yet to experience these domains firsthand. But they are certainly out there, despite wide skepticism, and I look forward to exploring them at some stage. 27. Animals in the afterlife. A few months before moving to my present location, my beloved black cat, Apollo, left my life. I was working downstairs in my office when some inner alarm bell rang and a message in my head told me to go upstairs and open the front door, even though nobody had knocked. There on the doormat was Apollo, stretched out and unconscious. I knew intuitively that he had been hit by a car, and I rushed him to the vet, tearfully asking God, my guides, or anyone else listening at the time to save him. It was not to be. My good friend Tricia McCarr, an animal whisperer and medium, had been helping discourage Apollo from bringing dead rodents and other wildlife into the house as a demonstration of his hunting skills. When I told Tricia about Apollo's accident, she volunteered to contact him in the afterlife. Apollo told her it was his time, but he wanted me to be the one who found him because he was my special friend. He had some other personal messages for me so that I would know that it was indeed Apollo's spirit giving the message. One of the questions often raised whenever I give talks or workshops about the afterlife is about the animals that share our daily lives. People are anxious to know whether they, too, go to the afterlife and are waiting for us when we cross over, or if they disappear into some mysterious place of their own. Some people are even in doubt whether animals have souls. The other point of controversy is whether animals can reincarnate, perhaps even coming back as human beings. John Dingwall and the team of spirits were most emphatic in their answer about the reincarnation question. Animal and human souls are different. The energy that has been part of an animal cannot normally become a person's. However, it is possible for an advanced being to reincarnate as an animal for an extraordinary purpose, but John added, generally that is not done, as they, the spirits, are two different vibrations. As for meeting up with our cherished animal friends when we return to the afterlife, John said that animals are everywhere, running around freely as part of the spirit community. Animals also have their own special area in the afterlife, but they are encouraged to mingle with the general community of spirits as well. Once we cross over, we are able to reconnect with what John describes as their familiar vibration. In many cases, beloved animal friends are among the first to meet and greet returning spirits. Their relationship with us then continues in the afterlife. There are many animal communicators on Earth, some referred to as horse whisperers and the like, as well as mediums who are apparently able to connect with animal spirits in the afterlife. Sometimes the messages that come through from animal spirits are very simple. I must admit the funny side of that struck me as I visualized a medium saying woof or perhaps meow as a message from an animal spirit to a bemused client. But John smartly pulled me back to reality by saying that at other times some very complex information is communicated via the medium. He described this talent as the special ability to tap into a slightly different wavelength. This contact is often a very special part of a soul's progression. The spirit of that much-loved animal, John said, is strong enough to push their energy back across to connect with a person on Earth, in a similar way to how human energy communicates from the afterlife. It is often an important part of the person's grieving process, as well as soul evolution, to make this connection. Today more than ever before, life must be characterized by a sense of universal responsibility, not only nation to nation and human to human, but also human to other forms of life. His Holiness, the Dalai Lama, John went on to say that connecting with an animal may be the only way some people can open their hearts. Animal spirits often come back to spend a lot of time with their former human friends, particularly those people who are on their own and very lonely. They share their energy with their human friend and, along with that person's guides and spirit helpers, have their unique role to play in healing. Sometimes young children will see the spirit of an animal that was part of their family, even though that animal died before they were born. Unfortunately, these sightings are usually dismissed under the imaginary friend banner. John, however, disagreed with those people who say that animals can offer us wisdom or guidance from the afterlife. He said animals are capable of passing through their emotions, but guidance is a different matter. His explanation was that there is insufficient vibration for the animal to pass on guidance. When I asked him about the messages that some mediums receive from animals, John's reply made a lot of sense. Are those messages really being received from animals? The information may appear to be coming from animals, but spirits are there as well, overseeing the communication. It is all part of the grieving experience. Higher beings in spirit are also capable of bringing their energy through in the form of an animal. The main thing is that people receive the appropriate information, from whatever source is best for them. Animals in the afterlife are apparently also capable of connecting with spirit energy if they wish to communicate or be with their previous Earth friend. I have sensed Apollo's presence around me several times since his passing, which has helped me cope with his absence from my life. It is also very comforting to know that our animal friends will be waiting when we cross over into the afterlife. 28. Looking into the future. John's earlier reference to advanced spirits being able to look into the future on Earth gave me a lot to think about in the weeks leading up to our next session. So far we had talked about the combination of destiny and free will as part of our life cycles and also the life contract that we all enter into before reincarnating. But John also mentioned that certain events can and do get out of control and build a momentum that is virtually unstoppable. The two world wars of the 20th century are prime examples. So, revisiting this topic, I asked how far spirits can look into our future from the afterlife, and how much is set in stone. John confirmed that people on Earth have the capability to look ahead, but most people do not use it. Psychics and clairvoyants have learned how to use their ability to a certain extent, but in the spirit world this talent is magnified. In the afterlife this skill varies according to each individual spirit's level of soul growth, so not everyone is able to clearly see into the future. John is not absolutely sure of his own limitations, But sometimes when he asks a question, he sees a little screen showing future events. But I only see what I am allowed to see, he added, admitting that he didn't know what was hidden from him, either. John described these visions of future events as the strongest path that will take place. Many factors can change the outcome if the soul, or souls, in question decides to exercise free will and go down entirely different paths. Influences such as drugs and alcohol can also come into play. Individual behavior trends, however, are taken into account by the spiritual planners when looking at probable future paths. A stable person may have a 90% chance of staying on the chosen path, whereas an erratic individual's future is hard to plot. It can even mean that a predestined life path can be cut short by extreme behavior. On a grander scale, John said, some world events appear inevitable, especially those in which several powerful countries are all heading in the same direction. In the early part of the new century, these countries are tearing themselves apart, posing a danger for those nations around them. There are grave concerns in the spirit world over the possibility of a bloody religious war at some future point. It is up to the people of the world to give their leaders a strong message that they want peace, not war. Once it gets to a point where there is no going back, even if certain world powers want to withdraw, it will be too late. John described the situation between very different cultures as deep-rooted and built out of mistrust. As for the possibility of eternal world peace and a predicted new golden era, John said it will be unlikely in his current sojourn in the afterlife. As he now resides in a timeless land, who knows how long that may be. 29. Visit from an old friend. Chris Kelly was a very talented medium and shamanic healer who helped me prepare for dialogue with the world of spirit when I was researching afterlife. Shamanic healing is an ancient practice that deals with the spiritual aspect of illness. Chris also played a key role in connecting me with the Brazilian healer John of God, from whom I received two amazing crystals that have opened a portal into the vast world of spirit. Chris passed over in a tragic accident on his farm property before my first book was finished, otherwise I believe he would have contributed much more to my research. While in the dream state, I had a brief contact with him about 6 months after he passed over, but then nothing for a couple of years. Imagine my delight when Chris unexpectedly made contact with us through Kellydale while he was in a trance communicating with John's spirit group. Up until then, the only spirit contact we'd had in these sessions was with the spirit of Kelly's late father, John Dingwall, representing his anonymous support team. This was a breakthrough for Chris, who we discovered had been in the wings with John's group since his passing several years prior, and he was almost beside himself with excitement. That's if a spirit can actually be beside himself. When he finally came through from spirit, his opening words were typically Chris, I'm so ripped to be here. Chris confirmed that this was the first time he had been able to come through in a trance session, where his spirit was able to enter and embrace the physical body of Kelly to communicate with us. Prior to this, he had been able to pass on several messages through mental mediums and contribute as part of the support group, but that was all. Chris chuckled loudly when he made the breakthrough, gleefully telling us that we didn't know how much it meant to him to make contact like this, to be able to speak again. He was so excited, he didn't know quite where to start, which was so unlike Chris in his previous life, a man quietly spoken but never at a loss for words. Now he was displaying a new energy level in his enthusiasm to connect with us. Chris described his situation up to that point as like being in a coma, not being able to pass the information across the divide. It's like being trapped in a body with everyone looking at you and you are not able to speak or anything else, he said. He repeatedly broke off in mid-sentence with delighted peals of laughter at his newfound abilities. Chris was like the proverbial kid playing with a new toy. Since his arrival back in the afterlife, Chris told us, he had visited a lot of places and had been with some amazing spirits and souls, and also orbs of light. He had also been spending a lot of his time back with loved ones on Earth, giving pieces of my energy, love, healing. He broke off again, saying in a dazed voice how he was just blown away to be getting through like this. Chris was only 41 years old at the time of his passing, and said that even though he'd been back in spirit for several years of Earth time, he was still coming to terms with his passing. When he left his body, he was very unhappy, thinking it was not his time, but has since come to accept the fact that it was. He still found it very difficult to be parted from his young daughter, Jamie, whom he doted on, describing this as like having my heart torn out. Just gut-wrenching. When I asked if he gets to see her often, his reply was typical of Chris, straight to the point. Oh, shit, yeah. He visits her several times every day, saying he doesn't know how long it will take him to adjust to this separation. He referred to a contract that was made before I became Chris, and he had accepted that his passing with all its complications was part of that contract. However, he also said there was a big difference in knowing that, and what was going on emotionally for him. Chris had also been a great inspiration for Kelly and his wife, Kristen, who spent 6 months in Brazil with John of God before setting up the Australian Casa in northern New South Wales as an official branch of John of God's Brazil Casa. Chris helped Kelly and Kristen in their spiritual preparation to run this important healing center, and his abilities as a shaman were a powerful influence, as Chris spent many hours taking Kelly to new heights of awareness as his spiritual mentor. A magnificent 300-kilogram rose quartz crystal was imported from John of God's center in Brazil as the foundation stone of the Australian Casa. When the crystal arrived from Brazil, Chris and Kelly meditated sitting next to it, and the connection they experienced left them both in a very emotional state. Chris said he has now been able to place part of his energy inside this crystal, which plays a significant role in the healing meditations conducted in the Casa. The meditations are known as current sessions because of the energy generated by each participant, linking the group in spiritual healing. He explained that while every crystal has its own unique energy source, the extra energy that can be placed in this particular one enhances its abilities. Indigenous peoples know how to put this kind of energy into rocks and crystals of various sizes for their healing and ceremonial purposes. Chris cited Uluru in Central Australia, such a spiritual and sacred place, as an example of this principle on a grand scale. I asked Chris if he would mind talking about the journey he has made since he left his body. Oh, no, that's why I'm here, he said with another chuckle. He described his mindset when he passed as being one of total shock. He realized he was parting with his body prematurely, and at the same time he was leaving behind his beloved daughter, Jamie, as well. He was distraught and felt he wasn't ready to leave at that time. I hadn't realized how much of my heart I had sunk into Jamie, and when it was all taken away like that, it was a real shock. But now Chris has reluctantly accepted that it was something Jamie, too, had agreed to in her life contract. Still, it does not make their separation any easier. Among his many activities, Chris had been a spiritual teacher and practitioner in his earthly life. When he left his body, he became aware that what he thought he knew spiritually was virtually nothing in the greater scheme of things. He described it as like becoming a baby again. The grief that he felt on passing was so strong that he needed time to work with it. He was met in spirit by Margaret Dent, a famous medium who had taken Chris under her wing and trained him many years earlier. Margaret took Chris to connect with a group of old friends and family members in spirit, which he described as like going to the pub for a school reunion. He walked through a doorway and saw many familiar faces, people he had not seen in a long time. They appeared to Chris exactly the way he had known them on Earth, same face, same person. Just familiar-looking people and all looking happy and joyful. Just a wonderful reunion with old friends. The initial reaction for Chris was that it was so awesome, he actually forgot where he was for a while. I totally forgot that I had passed over, it was just like being at a party. He described it as a feeling of coming home again, a sense of euphoria whose warmth and love were incredible. He caught up with many old friends, and some of those souls stayed with him in a spirit of mutual support as he settled into his new environment. After that welcome home celebration, Chris moved into a stage of learning. The healing he went through also included spending time with family and friends in spirit, which he described as being of great benefit. "There is so much to learn here," he said. An important part of his learning was to find out why he had to die in the manner and circumstances he experienced. After several Earth years in the afterlife, and despite working intensely with his soul group, he was still struggling to find all the answers. "I can't fully answer that question yet," he said a little sadly. Chris also revealed that he still found it difficult to cut his ties with the Earth, although he had fully crossed over, and said that a lot of his energy continued hanging around. He said he'd been given permission to do this until he was ready to move on more fully. However, Chris did engage in many activities in the afterlife, including looking back at the stage of soul development he had achieved before starting his last incarnation. He chose not to elaborate on that very personal aspect of his development process. Part of his new life in spirit included communicating with various people on Earth and passing on information about the afterlife. It was not surprising that Chris was part of the group that worked with and provided energy and support to John Dingwall as its primary spoke spirit. Chris warned that there was much information to be communicated and said, "It's going to come thick and fast, not only from me, but others here." But just as we settled in for a long chat with Chris, we lost contact, which was extremely disappointing. 30. An unexpected guest appearance. As this was his first communication since he crossed over, Chris Kelly could not sustain the energy level for long and he faded very quickly. We actually lost contact with him in mid-sentence, just as he was starting to talk about reconnecting with his soul family. This was very disappointing, as the energy levels had been very strong until then and Chris was on a roll. After Chris left, Kelly's wife, Kristen, and I sat for a few minutes wondering what was going to happen next, as this was breaking new ground in our afterlife contact via Kelly's trance medium sessions. But it wasn't long before another spirit energy struggled through with seemingly a lot of difficulty. The entity sounded very weak and spoke in a soft whisper, describing itself as a highly advanced spirit who was there purely to play a part in spiritual communication. We knew that anyone coming through would have to be genuinely associated with John's group, as they were controlling the energy in spirit. The spirit, who did not identify himself any further, sounded very pleased to be able to have the experience of being back in a human body, confirming he had enjoyed many lives on Earth. The spirit had not been in human form for a very long time, saying, "My place is here." After a short interval, the spirit announced in a whisper even quieter than before, "I will depart," and with that the energy faded and was instantly gone. We later felt that this spirit just wanted to show us the depth of support we were receiving from the afterlife. A few minutes later, the spirit of John came through to wrap up the session, saying that he had been part of the support group holding the energy to allow these two contacts to happen. He told us that Chris had been trying to come through for quite some time, as was evident by the excitement he shared with us. The communication that night had occurred on an eclipse, which John admitted certainly helped support the energy for bringing through the two spirits, but, he added, the timing was perfect overall to bring some others in his group through for the first time. After the session ended, Kristen and I were tempted to tell Kelly about his good friend Chris. However, we decided in the interests of any future contact to keep it to ourselves. Kelly also wished to read about these contacts when the book was published. 31. Illness and life contracts. Because of Kelly and Kristen's busy lifestyle with three children and a property to manage, it was not easy to schedule regular trance sessions. Sometimes many weeks would go by before we were able to get together to contact John Dingwall and the team again. This next session was one of those occasions, and we had all been looking forward to it for some weeks. Greeting John's spirit when it first comes through in each sitting is like catching up with an old friend, as we have established a wonderful rapport during our many sessions. And just as one would greet an old friend, without thinking I asked him how he was, to which he replied, "Very well, very well." A bizarre thought then struck me, do spirits have health problems in the afterlife? To my surprise, John confirmed that spirits do indeed get sick in the afterlife. And here I was, thinking all was perfect over there. Spiritual sickness is not related to the physical terminologies we understand it on Earth. No flu symptoms, upset stomachs, bloody noses, broken legs, or anything like that. Spirits experience sickness in an entirely different way. It will often manifest as a feeling of unease by which they immediately know that something is not right. John was speaking from his own experience, and confirmed this uneasy feeling is often related to what is happening to family and friends back on Earth. This particularly applies to those people who have recently returned to the afterlife. More advanced spirits have learned to cope with these feelings and not be so affected. John said that the best way to understand this condition is through the connection some spirits still feel to their human body, creating emotional reactions that take time to work through. My guide M describes it as an energy disturbance. Feelings and emotions related to our past incarnation do not just get cut off when we leave the body. Often a lot of anxieties cross over with us. Worries that spirits have about loved ones they have left behind can continue for a long time and are often related to their life contract that a spirit made before initially setting off on that life path. Spirits may have a sense of obligation, especially when those on Earth are going through troubling times in their life. So, how binding are the life contracts that we accept in spirit as part of a new incarnation, and are they still in place when we return to the afterlife? According to John, life contracts can be very fluid, not all is predestined. If someone's circumstances change radically, new instructions are issued from spirit, or perhaps another person takes over a particular responsibility, changing the dynamics of a situation. A release can also come into play, for example, when people on Earth are able to become more independent and stand on their own two feet, having learned the life lesson they had accepted in their own contract. Life contracts are made as a pre-life agreement with the elders in spirit, and, if broken, are likely to have widespread effects. New karma could be created that will need to be dealt with at some point. It can mean soul lessons go unlearned, which often results in at least one more lifetime required to learn the lessons. The life that I experienced as the materialistic desert trader Arlun is a good example of this. All we are doing is hurting ourselves when we knowingly break those contracts, because we are pushing ourselves into a corner, according to John. This means we do not move forward in our soul development, which is the main purpose of each life. The question of associated karma occurred to me at this point. I had been wondering what would happen if two people had agreed to share a life to resolve a mutual karmic issue from a past life, and only one of them was able to complete that karma, through forgiveness, for example. Would the unresolved karmic issue with the second person have any impact on the first? Could it result in both having to come back for yet another lifetime to sort things out? John confirmed that the first person in this case would move on, but the second one could have different options to resolve this resultant karma. There can be several different pathways to either teach or learn those lessons, and in these instances there is flexibility in their life contract. The tapestry of life that we discussed earlier is simply moved around so that another solution is available. This tapestry, of which all our lives form a part, is so complicated that John admitted he is often bamboozled in trying to understand the ramifications of particular actions. The different paths, and the way things are connected at so many levels in everyone's lives, are quite astonishing. However, he said that in general other people's unresolved karma does not have to impact us, unless we can donate and so create new karma for ourselves. 32. Coincidence or synchronicity? We often get caught up in our lives by what are described as coincidences, strange events that attract certain elements or people to us. I have long since stopped using the word coincidence, preferring instead synchronicity or even serendipity. It is so easy to dismiss certain key events as merely being coincidental and not look for the significance of such occurrences. So when John started to talk about the coincidences that occur in people's lives on Earth, I questioned the term, asking whether synchronicity or serendipity was more appropriate. But John, ever the stickler for correct terminology, insisted that there are indeed coincidences. It must be. Because not everything is or can be planned, because we have free will and there will always be human error along the way, so even a small coincidence can dramatically change someone's path or their lesson.